there are ancient practices that if you ever want to stamp out a culture or confront a culture, you cover it up. And there's some wonderful examples of this in human history that you can see in archaeology. When the Romans wanted to stamp out Jerusalem, they tore down all the buildings, tore up all the streets, laid out a different grid, and just to make sure that the people didn't come back to the holy sites, they built shrines on top of them. That's how St. Helen found the Holy Sepulchre. Those things happen. And the Christian community never forgot where to go to worship in Jerusalem at the Holy Sepulchre. In Assisi, where St. Francis Assisi was born, there is a headquarters for the Third Order Regular Franciscans. They wear the black robes. They're the T.O.R. Franciscans. And their headquarters is right on Post Office Square, the main square of Assisi, and it's built over a temple, a Roman temple, to Minerva. And that has always been their headquarters. And down below, once in a while, they'll still find a Roman sarcophagus. If they go digging around, like to build a parking place in the bottom of the basement someplace. In Mexico, if you go to a certain place on the eastern side of the large volcanoes, Popocatépetl and Iztaccíhuatl, on the Puebla side, there's a village there where there had been several Aztec temples, one for every day of the year. Today, there's a Christian church, one for every day of the year. And so this thing continues. It's one culture does it to another. And it doesn't just happen with physical locations. It also happens with pagan dates. So that, for example, Christmas was placed at a time of pagan revelry. And that's not unusual to find that the popes early on had to find a way to evangelize even the calendar, even time. And we are experiencing that today in our time. If you were to ask the highest church leaders over the last 150 years, what is the church confronting? What is it we have to cover up? What is it we have to confront? What do we have to do? It's the rise of atheism and humanism. I learned a long time ago, if you ever want to get into a fight, say something about a labor union. Because that's where it gets white hot. Why? Because the labor union movement, one of the things that has happened to them is they have been infiltrated by communism. I'm not saying that all labor unions are communist, and the church is certainly not against labor. That's where you can get into a fight. In the 19th century, in the 1890s, Pope Leo XIII issued the first encyclical letter saying from the Pope to the church, to the world, labor is precious. It's a gift of God. And every man should have just labor. Labor is blessed. Labor should be blessed. What was going on at the same time? The rise of Karl Marx and the philosophies on economics that had to take the church out of the picture. It was atheist in philosophy. It required people to be atheist. They couldn't compete with the church. If you wanted to take this into a government sector or into a ruling class sector, you had to establish atheism above the church. The church saw this coming from the 19th century, and the popes have been aware of it. There wasn't a feast of Joseph the Worker until 1955. What was happening in the mid-50s? Communism was on the rise. The beginning of the Cold War. Later on, we would see the Iron Curtain. Later on, we would see that who defeated communism was a pope, John Paul. But Pope Pius XII needed to do something. The labor union worldwide was claiming May Day as International Labor Day. So the whole labor movement took on this day in the early 20th century. Well, how does the church respond to that? It's basically atheism. You put Joseph right in the middle of it. You give it to Saint Joseph. He's got broad shoulders. He can carry the load. Who else would you give it to? What other saint would you ask to help you carry your cause through this atheistic minefield? That the church could have a position even in the worldwide labor movement and say, yeah, we are pro-labor. One of our own labored with his hands as a carpenter. He taught his son how to labor as a carpenter. These are important concepts, the dignity of work. But now you pick the you have to create the liturgy around that. And how do you do it? Well, you go back to Genesis to teach the dignity of man. In Genesis, day 6 of Genesis, God did probably the thing that distinguishes all of that week of creation, day 1, day 2, day 3, day 4. He created man. What did he create that whole week that was a bigger event than creating man? And he created man in his own image, in his own likeness. And he gave him dominion over the whole planet. God created man. In the divine image, he created them. Male and female, he created them. There is no dominion or subordinacy of woman to man or man to woman. We are not man without man and woman. It doesn't happen. That's who we are. The wholeness of man is in man and woman. And then God rested. He'd done his greatest creation. And it's important on the day of Joseph the Worker to speak to the whole world on what they're trying to claim as an atheist celebration, taken over just in the last 100 years or so, 150 years, to try and claim an atheist day and say, no, this is a Christian day. St. Joseph the Worker. And we're witnessing what the church has been doing for 2,000 years, evangelizing culture, preempting time, that it can tell us even the dignity and the worth of every single human person, even through our work and the saints that we can model our lives after, to continue to grow closer to God.